and welcome everybody to the latest edition of the TeachNet podcast. Today I'm joined by two colleagues from DCU, Enda Donlan and Peter Tiernan, and we're going to talk about a very exciting and innovative project that they are involved in called PIDEA. So without further ado, welcome to Enda and Peter. You guys have been doing a lot of work in this area going back a few years now. Peter, you might start with yourself. Where did this all come from and how did you get involved?
Michael, I suppose, as I said recently to somebody, unless you've been living under a rock for the last 2 years or 36 months or so, AI has really taken a hold in lots of aspects of society, or at least the hyperbole that exists out there would have you believe that AI has taken a hold in lots of aspects of society. And I suppose in a general sense, there's lots of reports out there in the formal media, out on social media, and even in the literature about some of the potential and some of the challenges around what AI can do and some of the impacts that it will have on society. We've lots of claims being made out there. Like, for example, there's calls that AI is going to alter the work dynamics within institutions. AI is going to take our jobs, or at least change the way jobs are going to be done across lots of facets of society. So no industry is safe if you buy into the claims. There's talk of AI being going to alter the way that we communicate with each other, how we engage with healthcare, how we build relationships with each other. And if you have read some of the headlines, even how we build relationships with AI itself, how we parent, lots of different things. And there's also lots of challenges from a societal perspective. Similar to the disastrous decisions we've made in terms of physical produce, there's overproduction of AI-generated content is going to create a lot of digital waste. There's lots out there in terms of the impact of AI for society, both in its potential, but also in the potential challenges that it poses. And that inevitably bleeds over into education.
When you have that kind of broader societal penetration with an issue, any issue, and we've seen this lots of times before, it's very quickly thrust into the area of education in terms of the implications for education, in terms of, you know, if it's a problem in society, can we look to teachers and schools and educators to fix it? If it's a need, can we look to them to address it? And those broader societal impacts always kind of have an impact very quickly then in terms of education itself. And that's one of the main reasons that it was felt there is a need to design a curriculum specifically for teachers to have them informed about what AI is and what it isn't, actually, is just as important, what it can do and what it can't do, what some of the implications for that are. And a lot of the time, too, we find that when you have an issue as big as this one, there's a lot of voices, and a lot of the voices are from outside of education. And they're talking about, obviously, as Peter just indicated, the broader societal impact. But inevitably, some of them try to have input into educational processes as well. And we'd always feel it's very important to have the voice of the educators at the center of those kind of debates as well. So there's some of the reasons that the project came around. Like, AI has such incredible kind of implications for teaching, schooling, learning, assessment, all those types of things.
I'm reminded, actually, as you introduced it there, Claire McAvinia, who is in TCD at the moment. Claire, a long time ago, in relation to digital, used a term, and I was talking to her recently, and I reminded her of this. She referred to the literature on digital technology in education, that you can view it in two ways, a literature of hope or a literature of disappointment. And I think this is where we are at with a lot of what you guys have just been talking about there. So hence you've got involved in this project called PIDEA. Peter, what does PIDEA mean? It's not a word Irish teachers would probably be very familiar with, but I know you've been doing a bit of research there for me on where it came from and some of the partners who you're working with on this project.
Yeah, of course. So to be fair, Michael, we also had never heard of PIDEA before we got involved in the project. And it was our very creative and talented Italian friends that came up with the title of this project. PIDEA is actually an ancient Greek word which is used in relation to education. And it's specifically about education in relation to the upbringing of the ideal citizen. So not only about developing knowledge, but also about developing character and the development of the whole person. And I think given the intro there that we talked about the potential impact of AI on society and education, I think it's a very clever choice of a title, because AI is not only going to impact a very niche area of what we do, or at least has the potential to not only impact a very niche area of what we do, but has the potential to bleed out into various areas of society. And we spoke, you know, before we started recording about some of the areas that intersect, like data literacy and digital literacy. It is about the whole person. So it's a very clever title. Our colleagues, our Italian colleagues who are leading the project are from Villa Montesca, which is a research institute in Florence in Italy. And they brought together a team of us with who come from 7 partner countries. So there's ourselves, our Italian partners, partners from Belgium, Bulgaria, Italy, Malta, Spain, and Turkey. And I suppose it's worth saying at this point that myself and Enda have been in the digital learning space for a long, long time. And obviously, as AI came on the scene, for want of a better way of putting that, we became very interested in the potential impacts of that in education. And we've been doing a lot of work in or around this area outside the Paideia project. We have an area of professional focus on our doctoral program, which we've recently retitled to AI and Emerging Technologies. And we've been doing lots of small-scale studies on the impact of AI in education and in assessment and in learning and all of those spaces. So there was a natural fit with ourselves with this project. So when we were approached about this, we grasped it with open arms.
Very good. And I suppose ye in DCU and have been very active in the project. You've published the Lit Review. So maybe you talk a little bit about the background research that the project has engaged in, and also give us a little bit of a timeline, because I think timelines are very important. This area is changing so quickly. In terms of the literature review that she led, the time frame there, what she found, what were some of the more interesting things that she found, or maybe some of the things that she expected to find and didn't find?
So as Peter mentioned, we led on the kind of the background research for the project, and there were several different aspects of that. And one of them was, as you said, a literature review. So it was a scoping review. A scoping review is a very specific type of literature review. You generally start with a large number of papers. You have fairly strict criteria about what makes it in or doesn't. And we started with nearly 500 papers, actually, to begin with, and we got it down to 75. We looked specifically at the 7 partner countries that Peter has just mentioned and took literature from there. We also got some from outside as the kind of general intro, but most of it came from there. The time frame for it, Michael, was we took papers from 2020 up until, I think it was March of 2024. So that's when we started the actual Lit Review itself. It was a fairly tight time frame, but we felt that, you know, with the advent of Gen AI really just starting after that period of time, that was the kind of time to go for. There was stuff happening before 2020, but not much. And given how quick the space moves, we wanted to keep it as relevant as possible as well. So we noticed kind of when we looked at them that, you know, there was papers started in 2021, but then really sharply increased from then onwards. And every indication was that that was going to continue past the 2024 cutoff that we had on it. We had, as we said, we had 75 papers. We got them from across each of the 7 countries. We were delighted to see that. Hardly a surprise that the larger countries, the larger population ones, had the higher number of papers. So Turkey and Spain had a much higher proportion of papers than Belgium, Bulgaria, and ourselves, for instance. We noticed when we looked at them, like there was so many patterns, so many things, but just some of the things we spotted. Much higher proportion of papers were looking at secondary education or post-primary education than primary. There were some from primary, but not nearly as many. There were some papers also, which was interesting because this is the approach we're taking in the project, that looked at primary and post-primary. In terms of kind of some of the subjects that AI was being used in, and again, it's worth kind of clarifying, this is a literature review, so this is academic literature published on it. It's not to say it's the overall picture, just what the literature is coming through. Lots of subjects came through. Some of them were kind of once and twice, and that's okay. The ones that came through more frequently, more often, were the STEM-related ones, so science, technology, engineering, maths. Several papers looked at AI with regard to language learning and linguistics. Computer science was also a focus of what was going on in there as well. We looked at in terms of what papers said about teachers' experience and opinions of using various different tools. Hardly going to be a surprise. Chatbots came through quite a lot in terms of the kind of tools that were being used in there. some of the reasons teachers aren't using AI also. So they kind of came through about their own, you know, current knowledge of AI. And again, that was part of our background justification, I suppose, for what we were doing. There were concerns about their own current knowledge of AI, prior experience of using it. And in broadly speaking, more broadly speaking, perhaps, the kind of general digital competence. They were using it for lots of different things. One of the papers I remember talked about 20 different things they were using it for. Yeah. They were talking about it using for obtaining information and answering queries, you know, generating exercises and tasks and pieces of text to use in class, help with administrative tasks and planning. Vocabulary acquisition was one of the ones that was really interesting, came through again, hardly a surprise with the linguistic side and the large language models, and lots of different things like that. So there was lots of findings coming through from the literature review.
It's very interesting, again, going back to the timeline, that's where we were at that point. And again, all of that literature was written at least 6 months before Yi found it. So was there any surprises in the literature review, I suppose? Anything that you thought you might find that maybe wasn't there as much?
One of the things that I remember being quite surprised about and intrigued about was AI anxiety. There were several papers talked about this concept of AI anxiety. And even, and this was learning for me, and that's one of the great things about being involved in projects like this, is you do learn lots yourself in engaging in the research. So AI anxiety scales exist, for instance, in terms of what people think about AI, what they know about it, what their fears. And lots of very nice papers too looked at metaphors for AI. And that's an area I'm really interested in myself as well. So they kind of gravitated to those ones. So the kind of the metaphors for AI, you know, as a kind of an all-seeing guru, for instance, and lots of different metaphors put forward for it. So there was some interesting stuff came through in terms of that side of things. Yeah.
And Peter, maybe just going to you there. So AI is the focus, not generative AI.
Yeah. So given the project timeline, so the actual kickoff, it runs from 2023 through to 2026. But looking at the literature and the policies, they would have been written before that date. And in a general sense, education was, I suppose, getting to grips with the implications and the influx of AI. So the focus, certainly in the initial stages and in all of the state of AI piece that we looked after, our initiative, our work package, was focused on AI generally. Now, obviously, through the literature, through conversations, and as the project has evolved, there has been a shift towards some of the impact of generative AI and some of the uses of generative AI. I suppose just picking up on some of that timeline aspect, we also conducted a policy analysis. My colleague, Dr. Alan Gorman here in the Institute of Education, that's his gig, that's his area of research. So he conducted that for us. And what we did was we searched AI policy across partner countries, European level, and some select international policies, AI in education policies, and also general ed tech policies across the jurisdictions, just to see, well, what are the themes that are coming out? What is policy advocating for? What is it suggesting? What does it say needs to happen next in the context of AI? And we have some very interesting findings from policy across a number of themes. They broadly speak to general sense of what needs to happen with AI, what needs to happen with teachers, and from an infrastructure perspective, what needs to be put in place. And we found relative consistency across the policies, calling for things such as enhancing education through the use of AI. Even at that, you could adopt a critical perspective and say, well, should we be calling for AI to enhance education? That's quite a specific viewpoint to take on a specific technology, but maybe that's for another podcast.
Well, no, I think this is actually what we should be focusing on. I mean, policy is the area I live in, not by choice, but that's where I am. Yeah, I mean, I think this piece of work that you've done on the policy is very relevant. I mean, can I ask you, did you find anyone that has an out-and-out policy on AI in education at the time that you did this work?
So at the time, no. So there's no specific policy.
I don't think you need to apologize for that, because I think if you were to even do it today, Peter, you would maybe find that they don't have it either. Because at the work at the Delta, what we're finding is, and France are probably the most advanced country ministry in this area, is that most people, even at the policy level in the ministries, are finding that it's moving so quickly that the most they have, if they have anything, are guidelines.
Yeah. So some of the other things, and we've spoken about this at length previously, myself and Enda, and also before we kicked off today's podcast, were calls in policy for the development of digital and AI literacy for teachers, which, Michael, if you've lived in policy for any length of time, you'll know that that's been a call for a long, long time. There's also talk of for the ethical use of AI and transparency in its implementation. So for individuals, including teachers and students, to understand how it works, how is it making decisions about them, to prioritize professional learning for teachers so they can adapt AI. And then in terms of the curriculum, there's quite a broad stroke statements around the integration of AI into subject-specific areas. So to help teachers understand, how can I use AI in my subject? A lot of the conversations are very broad about AI. So AI can do this, can do that. But policy is also saying, that's one thing, but how do I use it in science? How do I use it in English? How do I use it in maths? And how do I use it in an effective way?
But I think this is going back to that word enhancing, right? I mean, it's not used as much as it used to, but technology enhanced learning. I mean, I would question a lot of the uses I see of AI, specifically generative AI, in a lot of instances, is merely substitution for older practices, like creating lesson plans and worksheets. I don't know if it's really enhancing, but you know, I know that's not the focus of your work here, but you are developing a teacher training. There's an AI curriculum for teachers, which looks very interesting. So built on your work, is this one of the areas that you're hoping to help teachers to critically reflect upon and help them to actually think about their use of AI, and whether that's generative or other forms of AI, and to actually improve or enhance, or another verb that I'm not a fan of, transform?
So as part of the project, we also spoke to teachers, and this did come up. We spoke to teachers across Europe, and we also spoke to individuals in initial teacher education, philosophers, sociologists, pedagogues, about AI, and this area did come up. And maybe if I kind of go back a step and we talk about, well, what the teachers tell us first, and then we'll come back to that piece around replication and what the implications of that replication might be. Interestingly, a nod to the start of this conversation about some of the hyperbole out there about the use of AI. When we spoke to teachers, we found that there's a couple of broad strokes that they do understand, or they have a basic understanding of how AI works. And they are aware of the ethical implications, and they're quite concerned about the ethical implications of AI, particularly generative AI in education. However, their use of AI was low to mixed at best. And most of the use was around lesson plans, ideas for activities, and ideas for engaging students. They're not using it for assessment, feedback, or data analysis. And what came through really strongly was there's no real school policy to help guide them. There's no real training, or certainly not adequate training or CPD around AI in education, which obviously was important for us in terms of this project, the development of the curriculum. And interestingly, not only did they say that there's no policy and there hasn't been adequate training, but they really want this training, with some going as far as saying this training for this should be mandatory for in-service teachers and mandatory as part of initial teacher education.
Can I come in on that? I mean, I think that's very interesting. And I mean, this is again coming back in many, many conversations. I mean, groups like the ETUC, which is the umbrella organization at a European level for the trade unions, is calling for guidelines, and at the country level. And some countries have actually done really interesting work in this. Denmark is a case in point. But I think going back to what you said there about the schools and the need for policies and guidelines, but also I'm just curious, both of you were involved in all levels of teacher education, initial teacher education and continuous or in-service teacher education. What are your own thoughts on this? How can we equip teachers with, let's call it the AI competencies, to actually, or the digital competencies, going back to your earlier point, Peter, that a lot of this is actually, okay, we just take out digital and put in AI today, but, you know, they could be, and your doctoral program now uses the term emerging technologies. We could have something new in the next year or two. What are your thoughts on the implications for the role of teacher educators at all levels in this, you know, at all levels on the continuum in this area?
So I think to varying degrees, as the teachers put it themselves, like they're right, this should be mandatory in some form or another. Colleagues like Dr. Eamon Costello and many of us involved in initial teacher education here in DCU and ENDA included, on the programs that we teach in, we do engage with AI, and we do that in lots of different ways. So we do an overview of AI. What is it? How does it work? What are some of the implications for education? What are some of the challenges? And then we would implement it on a much more practical level. So for example, myself and ENDA have a small scale project where we, if you remember WebQuest.
Oh, I was a huge fan of WebQuest, Peter. Yeah. You're reminding me now of a world that I left many moons ago.
So I decided to revisit it. And so looking at digital literacy,
yes.
If you remember, the WebQuest is they get a set of questions and have to consult resources. So we designed a WebQuest for a set of students on our Bedlan program. And as well as consulting the resources, then they had to ask Copilot and ChatGTP the same questions and then compare and contrast the responses that they found themselves with the responses they got from Copilot and ChatGTP. Some of those small scale pieces are really about understanding and helping students to understand, what is this information? How does it compare with my own thoughts, my own thinking, my own ability to compare and contrast, so that they can see for themselves? I think personally, they can see for themselves the value in their own ability to think critically about resources more.
No, but I think that's fantastic the way you're doing it. Like, again, Pat Brennan and I, we do a lot of work with various groups of teachers, mainly actually in further education and training. And it's that active learning piece, you know? And again, you know, I've looked at the broad strokes end of, I know this is, you're still in the project, you're not finished at all yet. You've done the literature review, the scoping review, you've done the interview, so that's informing the creation of a, I think it's a 5-unit course. So just tell us a little bit about the course and, you know, what's in it, how it's being designed, and you're going to pilot it, where all that's going next, because I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, just one quick glance back to what we were talking about there. The scoping review we talked about earlier on did also actually look at teacher education. It's just as a very quick comment to say that out of the 75 papers, 20 of them were from the world of teacher education. So across that kind of 7-country consortium, it's definitely alive and a real issue in teacher education as well. But moving on to the curriculum, which is what you asked about. So the first thing to say is, it's very much a research-informed approach to curriculum development. So we've got the work we've already talked about, the policy analysis, the scoping review, the empirical work. There was also a look at existing frameworks that are out there. I think there was over a dozen different frameworks, some of them at European level, like DigiComp Edu, for instance. Some of them more local were looked at as well in terms of seeing what's already out there. There was a review of training approaches in the 7 different countries as well. So there was a look at what's happening in kind of the courses out there at the moment in terms of that. And these were all parts of what were used to kind of put together the approach for the curriculum. So in the training courses, there was, you know, a strong focus on things like foundational knowledge, the kind of the educational applications, obviously the ethical side of things, some of the challenges going along with it as well. And hardly a surprise, the practical hands-on, how do I do stuff as well. So all that was in the background in terms of coming up with the actual curriculum itself. The curriculum is a 5-unit curriculum. It's available on the website for anyone who wants to take a look at it. It's, as we said, it's kind of rooted very much in looking at DigiComp Edu and also the UNESCO competence frameworks as well, which are very big, obviously, at the moment. So they're the underpinning kind of framework behind it. 5 units. Some of them are optional. Some of them are mandatory. Everyone engages with unit 1, and that's the kind of the intake and self-reflection one. So that's kind of introducing the course, this idea of human-centered AI, very strong focus on human-centered AI, you know, assessing your own kind of readiness. And then from there, it kind of recommends that, well, you can jump to unit X or you should start at unit B. Let's put it like that, you know. Unit 2 is the basic awareness one. That's one of the optional ones. So that's really designed for the beginners. It's kind of the foundational AI concepts, the limitations, basic prompt engineering in real life context, things like that. We move along then to the third unit, which is the impact of AI in teaching and learning. And that's kind of divided into two parts, really. The first one is a more teacher-centered approach. So teachers themselves learning how to integrate AI into their more kind of teacher-centered practices, pedagogical side of it, the ethical side of it as well. But then as we move through Unit 3, we kind of see a transition to a kind of a co-creation approach, moving more towards the student-centered side of things. And then ultimately, at the end of the third unit, a much stronger focus on the student-centered side of things. So equipping students with the skills to use this and guiding them on how to do that kind of thing. And then the fourth unit is a mandatory one. That's the one on the ethical and legal use of AI. And this is personally one I always feel very strong about, this particular side of the AI conversation. So I was delighted to see this one. Responsible AI use, addressing things like the ethical side of things, privacy, the legal issues going along with this. Looking at things too, like Peter mentioned earlier on, like the EU AI Act, for instance, and things like that. And then the fifth unit on the way out is the kind of the outboarding and self-evaluation side of things, your kind of final reflection, looking at what's happening there, and then trying to think forward for future developments also.
One question. Is sustainability in there?
Sustainability is in there a little bit.
Yeah, from an environmental point of view. I mean, we had a long discussion about this. It was in DCU the last few days with another project we're doing called AIDL. It's looking at the whole area of data literacy and how data literacy now is changing with the usage of AI. But anyway, it just came up, Enda, that...
No, it
you know,
is, the, and it's one of the ones there in the kind of the more the ethical side of things as well.
So
sustainability is huge. And again, you know, going back to that, I think that's one of the key issues that does need to be considered in terms of this, because there's questions about, you know, when you use AI, the environmental impact
power,
of it, carbon footprint implications of it. But that also has implications for, and that's part of what's embedded in the curriculum. It's when not to use AI also. That's the big question sometimes.
Absolutely.
Is how do we use it? There's just as valid questions about when we don't. So for instance, you know, we're moving away from a time when people might use a basic image search or lovely sites to find like Pixabay, for instance, and moving to situations where we're asking Gen AI to create images. And sometimes that can take 10, 12, 14 goes to get it right.
Absolutely.
You know, but the environmental impact of that is enormous. And that's
a
simple example of thinking about not just when to use it and how to use it, but there's times you shouldn't as well, you know.
Absolutely. No, I think this is coming back to the whole area of criticality and critical use. Now, I'm not saying for one minute that, you know, that AI, like, again, Peter started the podcast with, you know, what other people are telling us is going to happen in the world of education. And we know the work that people are doing is changing because of these technologies. But sometimes, and I think more and more, we had a blog post recently on TeachNet from one of our colleagues, Frances O'Donnell, who actually makes a similar point, that sometimes actually you're better off to use older approaches and older technologies, and they're just as effective. And I think I zoned in there earlier on the word enhancing. I mean, I think that's part of the critical discussion here. But for maybe the last 5 minutes, because this has been fascinating and I could spend an hour with you, Peter, I might go to you. So where next? What are some of the big things we should be looking out for the general public? I know you're going to be piloting the course that Endra described there in the next couple of months, whenever it's ready. What should we be looking out for? And if people want more, we will put the web link in the notes. And I see you have a lovely newsletter and other things. Where are we going next?
So we're in the throes of it, for want of a better way of putting it. And you're right, the team is very active. So if you follow us on any of the social media platforms, we're on LinkedIn, we're on Twitter / X, we're on Blue Sky on our way to Blue Sky.
We're on Blue Sky.
And we have a website, and all of the deliverables are being published as reports, and we try to keep them as user-friendly as possible. And I know the team are also very open to inquiries and conversations too. So if you're interested in the space, to connect with us or directly with myself or Enda. So we're in the process of designing the curriculum and developing the content that's associated with that. But after that, there's a phase in one of the work packages, a phase in the project, which will be about rolling out a pilot to schools across Europe, with Ireland being included. And that'll involve piloting it with teachers. So we want teachers to engage with us, give us feedback, tell us what works, tell us what doesn't work, both in terms of content, format, and the delivery mechanisms that we employ. So we will be, and we have reached out in the past for expressions of interest. If you're interested in being involved in that pilot, get in touch with us and we will put your name on a list and contact you when that pilot is available. I think broader strokes, Michael, about what's next, I think we've touched on a lot of it. I do think we need to go back to digital competencies a little bit in a world where content is increasingly uncertain where that content has come from, who developed it. That, you know, information literacy piece around who produced it, why did they produce it, what are their motivations, how did this information come about? I think we need to refocus on developing some of those core digital competencies with teachers, and that includes positive aspects like being able to use a technology, but being able to use it critically. I also think educators, we need to think specifically around Gen AI. What is it? So it's a tool that creates content and, you know, creates lesson plans, etc. But that's not education. Education is the ability to write yourself, to think critically, to think creatively. So we have to be careful that we don't adopt a tool for the sake of adopting a tool. You know, Enda's point earlier about like when not to use it.
I agree. Yeah.
We don't use it for writing because the ability to put one word after another is what human thought and creativity is about. And we have to be careful we don't use Gen AI to replace that. Well, I could go on for ages.
No, but I think that's a whole other podcast, to be brutally honest. Yeah, I mean, you've introduced a couple of other things there. I have to just react briefly. I'm involved at the moment. We're developing a set of guidelines at the European level on digital education content, right? And there's an expert group. We've been working with them to sculpt a set of guidelines. And they're more than just generative AI, but you're 100% right. I mean, the whole use of generative AI, and it goes back to that responsible use piece that Enda touched on in the course. There's a lot of people are using generative AI to create content. My own view is some of the content they're creating is very questionable from a quality point of view, but I won't get into that today. But I do think that this idea that just because we have this technology, you know, I've just had an update on my Android yesterday. I mean, the amount of AI that's come into it overnight is quite scary. On another machine, on a Mac the other day, I did an update. You know, so we've all these tools. And the question is, you know, it goes back to some of these more basic questions. When, how, and should I use these? And I'm going to give you the last word. Where do you think it's going next?
Where do I think it's going next? I think one of the things, I think you've touched on one of the things that's very important there, Michael, which is it's going to be harder and harder to discern when we use it and when we don't, even though we just talked about how important that is, because it's going to be embedded in so many things. So a Google search, it's there. You can see it now. The top results are coming back saying, here's your AI suggestion. You just mentioned your Mac. I had the same experience. I can't remember what version of iOS upwards is going to have it in there. So it's going to become something that's more and more integrated, and making those decisions about when I do and when I don't are going to become harder and harder. But certainly, I think, Michael, you know, we've seen bubbles in the past when it comes to technology. We've seen great promises about things before, about how they're going to revolutionize education and change the world, all of that. The jury's still out on this one. I think, being realistic, this one does look like it's going to have a longer term implication than some of the other ones that were more flash in the pan than we've seen in the past. And again, maybe circling back to the start, I think part of the reason is because of that wider society. We're not just talking about something in education. We're talking about something that is everywhere. So it's going to be something that certainly I don't think is going to disappear anytime soon.
The ship has sailed. It's out there. And I think thinking about what education is about, going back to the name of the project and the, you know, the whole idea of the whole person and all of that, I think this is where, you know, the upbringing and the ideal citizen, I think this is where education needs to grapple with this. We cannot ignore it. And I think this project is definitely going to be a major contribution, with particularly looking at the group of teachers. And they will be co-creating with their students, which I think is going to be really interesting. And I think we'd love to have you back and to hear more about how that goes with the pilot, what you're learning, because I think this is an area that is evolving and it's certainly an exciting space. Well done to you both, and thank you for giving your time today.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks very much.